You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Ukraine says its defense ministry was hacked. U.S. investigations of apparent Russian influence operations during elections continue. Venezuela talks up cyber threats as contributing to its financial crisis. Dr. Webb reports a new Loki Trojan variant in the wild. BugSec and Cynet disclosed Facebook Messenger flaws, now patched. Colonel's Club breached, and hacktivists go after Russian consular data. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. Ukraine's defense ministry stated yesterday that its website was downed by disruptive cyber attacks that seemed designed to prevent the ministry from providing updates on the Russian hybrid war being waged in eastern Ukraine. The obvious suspect in the case would be Russian intelligence services. Investigation of election hacking proceeds in the U.S., with concentration on influence operations widely believed to have been conducted by Russia. Illinois Republicans say the FBI warned them in June that four seldom-used accounts may have been compromised as far back as 2015, roughly the period when Cozy Bear established persistence in DNC networks. Some emails, none particularly discreditable, eventually turned up in DC leaks, generally thought to be a Russian sock puppet. The CIA has famously concluded that Russian services did in fact seek to influence the election, and some private security companies, notably CrowdStrike, share that view with even higher confidence than the CIA. The details remain murky, especially the connections between the Russian services and WikiLeaks. Director of National Intelligence Clapper has told Congress that evidence of coordination between the Russian government and WikiLeaks is still inconclusive. There does, however, appear to be a strong circumstantial case for WikiLeaks having served as a conduit of information from Russia to the public. WikiLeaks has denied that Russian intelligence provided it with the DNS emails it releases. Venezuela, in the throes of its continuing economic and financial crisis, pulled in a prominent bank president for questioning over the weekend in connection with allegations that he was complicit in December 2nd cyber incidents involving online banking systems. Venezuelan officials also suggest that their withdrawal of their highest denomination currency, the 100 Bolivar note, is connected with unspecified concerns about cybersecurity as opposed to the widely believed prospect of hyperinflation. The executive in question was Victor Vargas, president of the Banco de Occidental Descuento. Dr. Webb, original discoverer of the Loki Trojan, warns that a new version can infect native Android OS libraries. Dr. Webb also reports that some Trojan downloaders are appearing preloaded in the firmware of discount Android phones. BugSec and Cynet say they've discovered a vulnerability in Facebook Messenger. They're calling it Original, that could give attackers access to chats and photos. Facebook has fixed the flaw, but it could also affect websites using origin registration checks. As the holidays approach, many of us are expecting to either give or receive gift cards. It's an increasingly popular gift, giving the recipient the ability to buy something they really want, and providing the giver with the comfort of knowing they spent slightly more time on choosing a gift than simply stuffing an envelope full of cash. But gift cards come with their own security issues, as we learned from Omri Illouz from Perimeter X.
You need to be very careful. Last holiday season, gift card fraud was one of the most lucrative attacks, and we've seen a significant increase. We expect it to be, again, one of the top attacks this holiday season. So the way that attackers abuse gift cards is by simply guessing the numbers. A gift card is simply a list of numbers, and if a website provides a way to check the balance and the attacker has access to enough bots, he can simply try hundreds of millions of combinations, and he will be very successful at some point in finding gift cards with balance. So if you look at the gift card, while it seems like a long list of numbers, there is a structure in it. There's usually a prefix per website. There's usually check digits at the end. So the actual number is much shorter. It's still very hard to find one if you just go and type them manually. But imagine you had 10,000 bots that can now go and type as fast as they want gift card into the page that checks balance. They'll run for weeks until they find gift cards with balance. And even if their success rate is very, very low, because they have so many bots and these bots can try as fast and as wide as they want, they just harvest. You can look at this as mining, or as they call it, harvesting gift cards.
So from my point of view, if I receive a gift card, as far as I know, I've never run across a gift card that allows, you know, for something like two-factor authentication. Is it a matter that I should really be vigilant and use that gift card as quickly as possible to minimize the probability of someone harvesting it?
I think that the most important part is knowing what's your balance on the gift card. If you're like me and you get 10 or more gift cards during the holiday period, you don't write down the balance. So if someone harvests your gift card numbers, you just go in and you know this is supposed to be a $100 gift card, but it has no value on it, you're just going to throw it away. Just have a list. Someone gave you a gift card, put it in a spreadsheet somewhere. When you got it, what's the balance? If you complain, most websites would give you back the money, but you need to know how to complain. I wouldn't say go and use it as fast as possible. We still want to have the opportunity to buy what we want when we want it. I don't want to let the attackers dictate our lives. Just needs to be a little bit more organized and get the money back when someone harvests your gift card.
That's Omri Illouz from Perimeter X. Netgear has pushed out firmware updates for vulnerable router models. Microsoft patches Skype, IE, Edge, and Windows, and Adobe has issued another patch for a flash zero day. KFC, the chain formerly known as Kentucky Fried Chicken, warned that its loyalty program has been breached. About 1.2 million British members of the Colonel's Club have been advised to reset their passwords after 30 customers' personal information appeared to have been compromised. It's a fairly quick disclosure. Michael Patterson, CEO of Plixer, told the CyberWire, quote, "The fact that KFC came forward about the breach is honorable. Clearly they have systems in place that allowed them to research which accounts were targeted. KFC needs to keep in mind that the targeted 30 accounts could have been a diversion method to distract from the real attack," end quote. He also noted that the company, Yum Brands, was commendably cautious in not holding credit card information in its loyalty program databases. And finally, Russian officialdom hasn't escaped the unwelcome visitation of the hacktivist community. Someone from the New World Hacktivists, going by the brassica-themed handle Kapustiki, has stolen some 30,000 passport records from the Russian consulate in the Netherlands website. Mr. Kapustiki says his motive is to raise awareness about the dangers of a data breach, and that he'll only leak a few of them at a time until people get the message. Somehow, one doubts the FSB will take him at his word. Mr. Kapustiki, in November, counted coups against Indian diplomatic missions in Italy, Libya, Malawi, Mali, South Africa, and Switzerland. No plausible motive beyond the implausible public education motive is evident. Perhaps it's all just for the lulls. Our linguistics staff, by the way, tells us that kapusta means cabbage, and they assure us their grandmothers saw to it that they ate plenty of it. If you're in the Netherlands, may we suggest the snert instead? Or in the UK, some KFC.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Joining me once again is Dale Drew. He's the Chief Security Officer at Level 3 Communications. Dale, when we see news come by about hacking coming from nation states, I think sometimes the definition of what that is a little bit fuzzy for some people. And I know, you know, from your point of view at Level 3, you all have a unique perspective on nation state hackers. What's your perspective? What can you share with us about them?
Well, you know, we recently published a blog on the anatomy of a nation state hacker, and it's really because of some of the observations we were seeing in a lot of these nation states that were just contrary to our common belief about how the ideal of how a nation state operator would work. And you know, it's sort of twofold. I mean, on the one hand, you know, we really saw it as it looked like and it operates like a fairly mundane job. I mean, we're able to detect when a nation state employee clocks in for the day. We're able to see when they go to lunch, you know, and they go to lunch for an hour or so, right? And then we see them when they come back and then when they go home. It's a very sort of regimented sort of process. In fact, this idea was, you know, we saw in some nation states, we saw a fairly complex ecosystem of different connected organizations that were responsible for different pieces. One piece responsible for identifying the companies that were engaged in certain intellectual property, searching for patents, searching for news stories, internet forum posts and things like that, and building this sort of database of assets of potential targets. We saw other organizations that were responsible for social research. What employees worked on what projects, what keywords do they use, what technology do they have? And then there's organizations responsible for downloading, purchasing, and getting access to source code of a pretty wide variety of product portfolio so that if they found out that a particular target was using that, they would have potentially access to undiscovered security exposures in the form of 0 days or half days to be able to weaponize that and then gain access to that target company for extended periods of time. We also saw a vast majority of it was really dependent upon getting access to the employee. I mean, most of these attacks we saw were based on phishing attacks, targeting very specific employees. And then the last one that I'd say is that one of the big observations we saw was a lot of nation state employees more and more are renting out their services to organized crime. Not only so those nation state actors can get a little extra cash on the side because they are being paid like government employees, but also because the nation states want to be able to obfuscate the complexity of those attacks with another actor, another source. And so, you know, when we see an attack, the fingerprint is pretty easy to determine. You know, we're like, oh, that's Fred from nation state X. We know that fingerprint. We know that style, but it's not a nation state in this case. It really looks like an organized crime attack. And so being able to attribute attacks is becoming much more difficult these days because those resources are sharing not only to other nation states, but to organized crime.
All right. Interesting stuff. Dale Drew, thanks for joining us.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.